You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. On today's episode, which is being dropped on Thursday, the 10th day of December 2020. We're already in mid-December, folks. Home stretch for this year. I try to see the glass half full with the Tony La Russa hiring by the Chicago White Sox, and I take a good long look at some of the teams that had minor league teams that aren't going to in 2021. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts, and you're staying at home during these, let's just call them confusing times. Be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB. Or check out some of the other great shows of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Mr. Cullen and Locked On Yankees, Stacey Gatsoulias. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. Send all Sunday requests to Sully Baseball, sorry, on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. I'm really sorry. I got a little bit hamstrung there trying to figure out what the heck I was saying. Now, look it. I have been reading a book about Connie Mack over the last couple of days, and Connie Mack was an interesting figure. He was the A's manager for the first 50 years of their existence, and he had a couple of really great runs with the Philadelphia A's, and eventually overstayed his welcome and didn't adapt to the times. At the time when he put together great A's teams that won pennants and World Series in the 1900s, the 1910s, the 1920s, and the 1930s, Mack adapted, traded players, picked up players, rebuilt the team, tore the team down, and had a couple of tremendous runs with tons of Hall of Fame players. But eventually, the way baseball started to evolve, he didn't adapt with it, and the A's got bad and bad and bad and bad, and he was more stubborn, and he probably should have retired around the same time his counterpart in the National League, John McGraw, retired in the early 30s, but he continued managing them through the 30s, through the 40s, and they were just an absolute mess. And ultimately, this great, proud franchise was run into the ground, and one team in Philadelphia had to leave, and oddly, it was the A's and not the Phillies, even though the A's had a lot more historical excellence on their team. If they had not been so stubborn and Mack had realized his time had passed, then maybe he would have handed the reins off to someone else. The A's would have put together another winner or two, and they'd still be the Philadelphia A's, and the Phillies would be God knows where else. I'm bringing that up because Tony La Russa is kind of reminding me of that. La Russa began managing in the 1970s, so he managed in 79, all through the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, he is now going to manage in his sixth decade. And he hasn't managed since 2011. He's already in the Hall of Fame. And as I pointed out, even though I have a lot of issues with him being hired as the White Sox manager, I have to, you can't not look at his career and say he had tremendous success in his career. I find it bizarre that he had the greatest way to ride off into the sunset, winning Game 7 of the 2011 World Series, why he would come back. And he is coming back to a White Sox team that doesn't seem to be a Tony La Russa type of team. And Tony La Russa, who at one point in his career was one of the most forward-thinking and innovative managers in all of baseball, doesn't seem like he's going to be the right fit for this young team This team that's going to play with a lot of flair and emotion, which never seems to be Tony La Russa's style. And it just seems like this is a bad combination for a franchise that's finally putting it together. Now, let's say he does win, though. The White Sox are going to be a very good team. And they picked up Lance Lynn. They picked up Adam Eaton, who was a malcontent the last time he was in Chicago. I don't see him fitting in with this team, but here we are. Here we are doing that. And, you know, the White Sox are going to be in a division with Minnesota, who's a good team. The Indians, who, you know, they still have talent, even though they're probably going to trade Lindor. They're a smart organization, and they've been able to adapt losing some of their players already. And after that, Detroit and Kansas City are not going to be big-time contenders. So the White Sox have as good a shot as anybody to win that division, especially if they make one more big move for their pitching staff. Their pitching staff right now is pretty dang good. I think if they get one more pitcher for their bullpen and maybe another bat, and they have Tim Anderson, they have the American League MVP in Jose Abreu. They'll probably get a bounce-back season from Moncada. So let's say La Russa does the job, and he manages the White Sox to the postseason, like he did way back in 1983. Let's just say Tony La Russa manages the White Sox back to the World Series. What if he sticks it in all of our faces? What if he does that? What would that mean to Tony La Russa's legacy, which is already a dang good one in baseball history? Well, he will have joined Connie Mack in managing a team to the World Series in four straight decades. He managed the A's to the 88 and 89 World Series and to the 90 World Series. So those are two decades right there. He managed, so that's the 80s and the 90s. In the 2000s, he managed the Cardinals to the 2004 and 2006 World Series. And in the 2010s, he, of course, managed the Cardinals to the 2011 World Series. So let's say the White Sox get to the World Series in 2021. That's four straight, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2000, that's five straight decades. That beats Connie Mack. Five straight decades with the Tony La Russa managed team. It's possible. He will also join a unique fraternity. Here are two names: Bill McKechnie, Dick Williams. Do you know what they both have done that Tony La Russa has a shot to do himself? And that Jim Leland was one Francisco Cabrera single away from being part of this group as well. Bill McKechnie and Dick Williams each managed three different franchises to the World Series. Bill McKechnie was the manager of the 1925 World Series champion Pirates, the 1928 National League champion St. Louis Cardinals, and the 1940 World Series champion Cincinnati Reds. Not too shabby. Dick Williams managed the 1967 American League champion Boston Red Sox, the 1972 and 1973 World Series champion Oakland A's, and the 1984 National League champion San Diego Padres. A hit here or a hit there, the Expos would have also made to the postseason under his watch, and maybe won a pennant along the way too, but let's not talk in hypotheticals. Dick Williams and Bill McKechnie are the only two managers to win pennants with three different franchises. Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. Tony La Russa, if he leads the White Sox to the World Series as a manager, something he almost did back in 1983, has a shot to tie in those loose ends this year. If he does that, he will join Bill McKechnie and Dick Williams as the only manager to manage three different teams to the World Series. But how about this one more hill for him to climb? Let's just say, and I have to say, I am I'm not a La Russa fan. I can't possibly make that any clearer. But I do like the White Sox. I do like this White Sox team. Tim Anderson's one of my favorite players. Jose Abreu is becoming one of my favorite players. I think they're a fun team. I think they're an exciting team. I think they've got a lot of great young talent, and you hope Tony La Russa does not spoil this party. Let's say they win it all. And I wouldn't mind seeing that. I wouldn't mind seeing that at all. There are certain teams I really, really do want to see win the World Series. They may take priority over the White Sox, like the Mariners, the team that I am supposedly a fan of these days. Also, the A's are another team I'd like to see win the World Series. So would the Pirates. So would the Mets. The Angels I want to see win, mainly because I want to see Mike Trout win a World Series title. I think that'd be good for baseball. So maybe the White Sox aren't a top priority of mine to see them win the World Series, but they're certainly a team I wouldn't mind seeing win. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the White Sox because they always seem to get shortchanged in terms of love from Chicago sports fandom. So there you go. If they win, then Tony La Russa would have, you know, 80s, 90s, 2000, five straight decades taking a team to the World Series, all this stuff, and would be the only manager to manage three teams to a World Series title. That's what he could possibly do. Now, I don't know, maybe that was something that stuck in his craw. Maybe that's why he came back. Maybe realizing he came up short in Chicago in 1983, and if he had won with the White Sox in 1983, that could have been his legacy. I don't know, and neither do you. The fact of the matter is, that's what could happen. Will it happen? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've thought a lot about the La Russa hiring, and it really could be a disaster, like Bobby Valentine. Or it could be surprisingly effective, like when Jim Leland came out of retirement and managed the Tigers back to the World Series. Or when Jack McKeon came out of the retirement midway through the 2003 season and managed the Marlins to a World Series title, adding the last chapter to his already wonderful managerial career that he had as a manager for several teams, including winning Manager of the Year for the Reds one year, but he never had a title to go for it. And then 2003, he added to it. So, a lot could happen. Will it happen? Not sure. I really don't think there's a mid-ground. It's either going to be really good or a disaster. But as it stands right now, La Russa already has a storied career, could even make it more storied. Is that a correct use of that? I was going to say storieder, which I know makes no sense. That's almost as bad as the copy they wanted me to read for Built Bar, where it says it's even more deliciouser, which I won't do, but I will tell you that Built Bars are delicious. They're the best tasting protein bars out there, and they got six great new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Their bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, but they're also healthy for you. Built Bars are great for a health-conscious person, someone who's trying to lose or maintain weight and want to indulge in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for the keto diet. Let's take one of the Built Bars, shall we? Shall we take peanut butter? Peanut butter has 19 grams of protein. It has only 180 calories, 5 grams sugar, 5 grams net carb. You can get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. There was no minor league baseball last year, and for a bunch of cities, there won't be any minor league baseball moving forward. And there's going to be contraction for a bunch of teams, and it stinks. It really stinks. I love minor league baseball, and I think minor league baseball should be used to help build up the game. especially if baseball addresses the fact that they can be the team of the internet. Once we start going out to see games in person again, if that ever happens, please wear your mask, folks. I'm tired of living like this. Then, you know, minor league baseball could be a way to build up the experience of loving going to a game. And that it's such an incredible experience to go to a minor league game. It's affordable. You're right close to the field. You can, you know, meet the players afterwards. The people there are people who love baseball. It's a great experience. I've been to minor league games in Spokane and San Jose. I've been to minor league games in New Britain, Connecticut, and Bridgeport, and New Haven, Connecticut, and Brevard County, Florida. Been a bunch of minor league games over the years, and it's so great. It's such a wonderful experience, but they are pulling back. They're contracting. And some of the teams that were affiliated, some were as high as double A, like Trenton, are being thrown in some of these new leagues that are like draft leagues, like players want to, you know, players who are trying to get drafts can be able to play in a competitive league as a sort of a showcase. There's going to be a collegiate summer league, which is, I guess, kind of like the Cape Cod League. And that's going to include teams like Danville, Virginia, another city I've been to a bunch of times, and Princeton, West Virginia, a lot of those places in North Carolina and Tennessee. It's kind of creating Cape Cod League South with a bunch of formerly affiliated teams. The MLB Draft League is going to include a lot of teams in Pennsylvania and New Jersey and New York. And then there's going to be a new Pioneer Independent League where a bunch of teams that are based like in Billings, Montana, or Missoula, Montana, or in Colorado or Utah or Idaho, that they're going to be having their own sort of independent league, totally unaffiliated. And they're going to try to piece together their teams there. But then, and this is the biggest gut punch right now, is there's going to be a bunch of teams that were affiliated that are not going to have any affiliation and not part of a current league. You don't know what to do with these teams now. They may just no longer exist. The Hagerstown Suns, as featured in the film Bull Durham, is now cut off. Burlington, Clinton, Iowa, Kane County, Illinois, Lexington, Kentucky, Charlotte, Florida, Charleston, West Virginia. God, I'd love the town of West Virginia. Northport, Florida, Salem, Keyser, which is in Oregon. A bunch in New York, like Auburn and Batavia, Norwich, which used to be the Norwich Navigators and the Norwich Sea Dogs, Tri-City, the Vermont Sea Monsters, or was it the Lake Monsters, which had one of the best caps in baseball, which is this sort of Nessie-like monster coming out of the lake, and the water that parts as a head comes out forms a V to stand for Vermont. They played in one of the oldest ballparks in all of minor league baseball. Nope, gone. And same with the team in Boise and same with the team in Lancaster, not too far from standing right now. The two that were the biggest gut punches for me were the teams in Lowell, Massachusetts and Staten Island, New York. And they represent one of the coolest parts of having a minor league team. And that is you had a minor league team that's in relative close proximity to the parent club. The Giants had that with the San Jose Giants. And they have these big murals of all the players like Pablo Sandoval and Madison Bumgarner and Brandon Crawford and Buster Posey, all the players who played in the farm in San Jose, to basically say, hey, come see them here before they become stars up there. And Lowell and Staten Island certainly had those feelings. Lowell with the Red Sox, Staten Island with the Yankees. And Staten Island, having a team in Staten Island for the Yankees and a team in Brooklyn for the Mets, sort of added a little intrigue of, yeah, you've got, you know, a team in Queens and a team in the Bronx, but you can have a little bit of rivalry between these boroughs as well. And now you don't have that. I mean, the Brooklyn is still there, but you're not going to have Staten Island, who have a beautiful minor league stadium right off the damn ferry. And Lowell had a great relationship with the Red Sox, and the Spinners, the Lowell Spinners, did a great thing where there was one year at the height of Red Sox-Yankee fandom, you know, the mania between 2003 and 2005, that one of the local Little League affiliates, you know, when the Little League hands out teams and they're the replica uniforms of the Major League teams, some of the kids there in Massachusetts didn't want to be the Yankees because they hated the Yankees. They didn't want to wear a Yankee jersey, even for Little League. And so for those teams, those Little Leagues that didn't want to play as the Yankees, the Lowell Spinners came in and offered them Lowell Spinners uniforms so they could be Spinners, so they could, instead of rooting, being for the team that they hate, they could represent the local team that's nearby. And a lot of the players, like, you know, friend of the podcast, Hillary Barriford, talked about how when she was a reporter for the Lowell Spinners, that she got to interact with, like, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury and Clay Buchholz and all these people who were part of later Red Sox World Championship teams and see them as minor leaguers. And now that's gone. That's gone for a bunch of these teams. Yes, a lot of minor league teams are going to survive, assuming we're going to have minor league baseball, but we're losing this. And we're losing all those cities, all those communities that have that centerpiece. Now, how much of this is me harking for some ideal of baseball? How many of this is things that people don't really care about? I don't know the answer. When you have a good, solid, fun piece of affordable family entertainment in a community, and you're trying to build up baseball, and you get them to enjoy baseball in the local sense, and then build up what you're showing online and on TV and all the different places, man, it just seems like, it's a tough thing to see all these teams get axed, especially when we're hearing about how, yeah, they lost revenue because of COVID. They just signed a $1 billion deal. You know, there's still money coming in. And there are ways they can certainly make money in the world of the internet. Here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that the Charlottes and the Staten Islands and the Hagerstowns and the Batavias and all of them form some other kind of league, some independent league, and build up a following, that they wind up signing players who've been non-tendered, a couple of recognizable names here or there, have a foothold in New York and a foothold in New England, and have a situation where maybe they build it up and build up a fan base with the help of the internet. You know, I'm not saying that they'll take on Major League Baseball, but what I am saying is maybe playing in a major media market may not be as important anymore if most of the people are watching via the internet and their devices. So anyway, those are just some of my thoughts here. You know, rest in peace some of these teams for now. Maybe we'll see you again in the future, but you'll see me again. Send me your Sunday request topic so we can talk baseball on Sunday. That's going to be, I already have a couple lined up, but keep sending them to me so we can have the topics all ready to go. Let's go to the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and all the places you get your podcasts, talking about Tony La Russa, his place in history, and a possible place for some of these minor league teams to go, whom we will miss. This is Locked On MLB for the 10th day of December 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.